that. So, well, hey guys, I'm back. Do we want to get started?
Yeah, sure, totally.
Rock and roll.
All right. Well, hey, let's just jump into it. Hey, folks, thanks for tuning into the BAMF podcast. I'm your host, Mike Lafferty. With me today are Sean Isaacs. Hey, Sean, how you doing?
Hey, cool, man. Cool.
Appreciate you joining us. For those who aren't familiar, Sean does the Pathfinder, the Goblins comic for Pathfinder, as well as the Pathfinder comic. And what else do you work on, Sean?
Working on Stray at the moment, creator own book. That's going pretty well. And at the moment, just a lot of Mutants and Masterminds artwork.
Oh, what book? Can you tell us what book you're working on for Mutants and Masterminds?
They've got the supplement that comes out every couple of weeks called, the Atlas?
Oh, yeah, the geography book.
Yeah, I'm busy doing some artwork for that at the moment.
Oh, excellent.
So you'll probably see a lot of those then.
All right, well, thanks for joining us. It's always a pleasure having you on.
Despite my complaints about everything. But I'm not one of those. I'm not that guy.
Sean's actually very happy and complimentary when he's not on this podcast.
There you go.
Yeah, we've got Dr. Comics, Mr. Jason Dondero. How you doing, Jason?
It's a good day. Thanks. It's great to be here.
Thanks. Good. Glad to have you joining us. And we have Mr. Walt Rebilliard. How you doing, Walt?
Unstoppably caffeinated.
All right. All right. And hey, we want to do a hat tip to Radio BAMF, who I found out I think is a UK-based podcast that covers comics.
Oh, no way. When are we doing a team-up?
Seriously.
I think we're going to have to battle for the right naming rights. I'm hoping to send you, Walt, once your leg gets better.
I actually have one of those cool cam boots on, so now I'm actually I'm cleared to fight, so let's do this.
All right. Yeah, comic book writers who were making jokes about all the fun they had in the BAMF podcast, and they tagged me on their tweet, and I was like, guys, I drink kind of heavily, and I'm not sure I remember this podcast. Do you have a link? They're like, oh, no, it was Radio BAMF from the UK. And I was like, oh, okay, well, I guess I'm their mustachioed evil doppelganger, or go-to evil doppelganger. So, well, hey, introductions aside, we are here to talk about X-Men Days of Future Past.
Yeah.
Some of us like it, some of us hate it. Jason, I know you have deep thoughts on this one. You want to go first?
Sure. This is going to get kind of literary and out there, but bear with me. So first, I enjoyed the film, and I thought about it a lot when I got out of it, and I ended up writing kind of a review summary of my thoughts on it on my blog. So I'll send everybody to drcomics.blogspot.com if none of this makes any goddamn sense. But what I thought, there were a few things that I thought about the film, and I liked it probably the best, the second best X-Men movie. I mean, I think that the X2 stands up pretty well and has held up pretty well over the years. But I think this one is probably, you know, better than any of the ones other than that one. So I definitely recommend people seeing it if you haven't already. What I thought was interesting about it, and I'll just zoom in on one thing, is they really have made it kind of Raven Mystique story. She's really at the center of it, and there's been some criticism of the film that it doesn't portray women very strongly. Andrew Wheeler at Comics Alliance really dug it a hole, because he felt like they had taken all the strong women out of it. And he sort of acknowledges Mystique and then casually dismisses her as not really relevant, which is weird because the whole ending sequence of the film, can we spoil it, Mike?
Yes, please do.
Okay. So at the end of the film, there's this moment where Mystique has like got a gun on, I think, President Nixon or something. And all of his fellow, you know, White House cronies. And she's trying to decide if she's going to shoot them or not. And Xavier Charles, who's been giving her orders through the whole movie, and I think this is really interesting, because they're good orders. They're noble, true, and right orders, but they are orders nonetheless. And at one point, she even says to him, you're still telling me what to do. And finally, at the end of the film, he says, you know what? You're right. I need to stop telling you what to do. This is all your decision. It's your call. I'm not going to tell you what to do. It's up to you. And so in a lot of senses, the ending of the film is about a guy realizing that a woman has to call her own shots. And I really respected that as a central heart tenet of the film.
Yeah, I read your review before I saw the film, and that was kind of what I took away, too, was, I mean, it's kind of unusual to have an American action movie where, you know, at the crisis, the ultimate conflict,
yeah,
the guy steps back and says, you know what, I've been wrong to boss you around, and gives the woman agency, or lets her have, yeah, you know, however you want to phrase that, and that struck me as really kind of a interesting twist in the screenplay. So I don't know, yeah, if Action Comics Alliance could dismiss the Mystique character, but...
You know, I think Andrew Wheeler, and I'm going to confess... I'm starting to come up with a new initial acronym, which is AWDR. Andrew Wheeler didn't read, but I disagree with almost every review he writes. But he basically dismissed Mystique because he said that the actress who's playing her, somebody help me out with her name,
Jennifer Lawrence.
Jennifer
Lawrence is like too pouty or too, like, too, like, obsessed, and she portrays the character as like too vulnerable, and so we don't really like her or get into her problem. And then he proceeded to go on for another three pages about how this should have been a Kitty Pryde movie. And I know that I'm totally down with that criticism, that this was originally a Kitty Pryde story. In fact, it's almost the quintessential Kitty Pryde story. But, you know, if we're going to make it into a movie, it's got to have Hugh Jackman in it. I mean, you know, that's just the realities of the financial. And I'm not saying that makes it a better movie, but that's the only way that the movie's ever going to get made.
Yeah, Hugh Jackman's the reason my mom knows about X-Men movies.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, every once in a while my mom wants to, you know, make an observation about the X-Men to me. It's always from the movies. And she's like, well, what's going on with General Stryker? And I'm like, you know, if Hugh Jackman wasn't in this movie with his shirt off, you wouldn't fucking care. But okay, Mom.
You're not wrong, but it has worked.
I mean, Flippin', I wish I looked that good when I'm 50. Holy crap.
Just have his shirt off in this movie, we will know.
Yeah.
There is the butt shot fan service in this film.
Let the record show that Mr. Tondra brought up the butt shot first.
Well, I call it what it is. This is – superhero films are starting to realize that they can appeal to women, that they can get women in the – and I'm not trying to say that women only come to movies for the butt shots, because obviously that's not true. But there's been plenty of sex appeal aimed at men over the years in movies, and the rise of people like Hiddleston playing Loki and characters like that who have really captured the female and Thor and so on.
Oh yeah, it certainly doesn't hurt. I'm not going to criticize that. It's just smart marketing. So, yeah. Okay. Well, is that your full thoughts on that, Jason? Or you got anything else to say?
I could talk for an hour, but I should not. So I'm going to shut up.
Okay. Sean, you hate this movie, so let's get the other side. What's up?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Jeez. I fell asleep, man. I fell asleep halfway through the movie. Honestly, I freaking woke. I remember like sitting there watching, and then I passed out. And when I woke up again, it was like, hey, when did Xavier get back in the chair? Like, what happened? Because I honestly didn't give a crap. No, like, you know what? It comes down, like, I also read that article on, I think it was Comics Alliance and stuff.
Andrew Wheeler's Spiller review?
Yeah, like, and I usually end up reading some reviews or whatever because I'm not all that eloquent sometimes when I'm trying to express myself. So I'm sitting there going, oh, that's exactly how I would have phrased it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now, I'm not saying that everything you said was right, but I'm like, I should relate to a couple of things. For me, the best part of the movie, I can sum up in a couple of things.
Sure.
I love Jennifer Lawrence in it. She was I enjoyed her as Mystique.
Yeah.
She was very cool. Seeing Cyclops again and seeing James Marsden back as Cyclops, I was like, yeah, that's awesome. Like,
I couldn't believe they did that. Yeah, yeah, I'm totally with you on that.
I loved it. I was like, because I saw Gene and I'm like, geez, I sat there. I was like, for fuck's sakes, if they don't have Cyclops in here, I'm going to be even more pissed than I already am for wasting my money on this movie. and then all of a sudden, like, he shows up and I'm like, ah, yes, I'm glad I was awake for this.
Yeah.
And then, I enjoyed the Quicksilver scene.
Yeah.
And I liked, the post-credit scene as well. That was cool. That's pretty much all I enjoyed in the movie.
That's a good chunk of the movie, man.
Not really. But the thing is, I do admit that when it comes to superhero movies, I feel like we're very spoiled right now. Like we've got, like Avengers and all these other movies, and they're so, so good. So like your expectations for what you want out of other movies are kind of raised. I know mine are, and I've pretty much hated the whole way that Fox has handled the X-Men from the beginning.
Really?
Yeah, I've never been a fan. I thought like they kind of just, I don't know, they're not true to the characters. If you look at the like casting and stuff, you take Rogue from right from the beginning. That's not the Rogue from the comics. She's not like the strong, you know, female figure, which is kind of what you want. Like you know, like she was terribly cast, and I sat there going, "Why the fuck did you change it?"
Yeah.
Then you look at Quicksilver, just to give you an idea. Quicksilver in this latest movie, like he's Quicksilver in powers only. That is it.
I will point out they never call him Quicksilver.
No, they never do. But it's kind of what, like obvious he's supposed to be Quicksilver.
Well, I think even
in the posters they call him Quicksilver.
Oh, do they? Okay.
But you know, like all the implications are there that this is Quicksilver. They could have used freaking North Star as well. But I mean, and also it was a character that was just used for like one purpose in the movie. That was it. I'm sitting there going like, why do that? Like, the movie would have been so much more exciting if you'd taken him with, like, throughout the whole movie. The end fight scene for me was boring, the climactic battle, like, right at the end. Because if you break it down, what happens in the fight is Wolverine dodges some sentinels and then gets stuck full of pipes and thrown out of the Colosseum. Beast rips the head off of a sentinel and jumps around, and then the rest of the fight is a conversation between Xavier, Magneto, and Mystique. That's the whole big battle. I'm sitting there going, okay. You don't really care about any of the other characters like that show up in the future. You're sitting there going, oh, okay, I know these guys. Like, that's that dude because that's the powers that he has and so on and so. And I feel like Bryan Singer literally just goes and says, okay, who's got cool powers that we can put in the movie? Like, he doesn't care about character. And if he does, they're barely recognizable to the ones that we know. So I'm pretty sure, like, Fox will never, ever give me, as long as they have the rights, they will never give me an X-Men movie that's true to the characters in the comics that I want to see. It's not going to happen. Even Havok, like, okay, no, we're gonna change the color of his powers so that we can see that he's Cyclops' brother, but we're going to make him have these weird energy hula hoops that he can't control. And I'm sitting there going, his power is so simple. Like, he explodes because he can't control it until he gets a suit. How difficult is that to do in a movie? You know?
Yeah.
And so the concept of the character is completely gone. Another character that they pretty much ruined. Sabretooth in the first movie as well was just awful.
Sure.
I'd say highlights of any of the X-Men movies for me would be actually seeing, I mean, that movie was fucking terrible. It was the first Wolverine Origins movie.
Oh,
but
yeah.
the best thing about it was I don't even know how you pronounce his surname, but Liev Schreiber, the guy that acted as Sabretooth.
Yeah.
Like, he's such a good actor. Like, I watched it just because he's entertaining to watch, even though the script and the everything else just sucked so much balls.
Yeah, he's phenomenally good. Yeah, he really is.
I know. And so, I want an X-Men. Like, I think Marvel would do, like, if Marvel Studios had the X-Men movies, we'd get something really, really great, and it would, like, surpass all the other Fox X-Men movies. And I mean, I was kind of hoping that this reboot of this series, this movie, would kind of change things.
Yeah.
But it really didn't. It's kind of like, okay, so where are we going to go now? Oh, wait, now we're going to have a story set in the 80s for X-Men Apocalypse. And I'm like, really? Good Lord, people. Then we're going to have one set in the 90s. Eventually, we're never going to catch up. And we're never going to get something different.
Well, no, I don't know. The Apocalypse story has to be in the 80s. I mean, the after-credits scene that featured Apocalypse didn't really seem to have any kind of time element in it. I mean,
that seemed to look like it was set during today, like a modern thing. So you'd think like that's where they would go, but most of the news that I've read on it is that the next one's going to be set in the 80s. Hmm. But they might be getting a different director, so who knows if that'll change.
Yeah, they're worried that Singer might have to do some court dates and miss the production.
What is he on trial for?
It's a little messy.
Was it an
accusation?
Assault charge?
I don't know if it's so much assault, but the person who was making the suggestion was underage at the time. But yeah. It has. I don't know if it's gone to court yet or not, but still a thing.
Yeah.
But, well, you know, what I think is going on with, you know, and I absolutely hear your disappointment when you talk about how the films aren't true to the characters. And I think that what I would suggest is that it's kind of like in Star Trek, you know, like when Abrams came back and did Star Trek, and there's characters that the directors like, and those characters are actually kind of true to their characters in the comics. And in X-Men, that's Jean. And I liked Bryan Singer's Cyclops, even though he was always the butt of the jokes, but that's how he is in the comics too, you know? And I'm actually a Cyclops fan. And he clearly likes Charles and Magneto. And those are the characters that are kind of most accurate to their portrayals in the comics.
Yeah, totally. The favorites are.
What's that?
I say, Joe. No, totally. The favorites, the guys that are like headlining, are like as close to the characters as possible.
Yeah, and then everybody else is just, well, we have a name. Let's add a special effect to it and do whatever we want with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I totally. You're absolutely right on that.
I mean, like, I would love to see a new reboot kind of starts off with like they get like young, good-looking actors that are like up and coming to start off, and they start off being students, you know.
Yeah,
and then
I would love to see an original X-Men movie with Ice and Beast and Angel and
exactly, and then have them kind of like you have the first movie as in like they're in this new school, they're trying to figure stuff out, and you have like the cast all small with like one like main villain, a couple of like humor beats and all that type of stuff, and then like the second movie where they're a bit older, then you can introduce like the second team, you know, getting taught and so. And if they do it that way, by now we would have had freaking hell the characters from the Wolverine and the X-Men comics, and you'd slowly build up this ever growing cast of mutants, but keep them like manageable so that you could focus on their characters instead of these throwaway pieces that it felt like in this movie where they were just like moving these characters around the board all the time.
I think you're describing that latest X-Men cartoon, the Wolverine and the X-Men cartoon, where everyone was in school.
No, I'm actually talking about the comics, the current Wolverine and the X-Men comic series.
Oh.
They've got like Wolverine is the headmaster of the Jean Grey School for Gifted Youngsters, and they got like these new mutants, which are actually such cool characters. There's Shark Girl and Eye Boy and Apocalypse, basically, but like the younger, like a clone of Apocalypse called Genesis, and Kid Gladiator. It's a really cool book. Lots of fun.
That explains where Kid Gladiator came from in that last episode of Young Avengers. That's cool.
Yeah, no, Kid Gladiator is awesome. Hollywood, he keeps on, like, in the latest issue, well, not the latest issue, like, I kind of get them in trade, but in the one issue, he annoyed everybody because all he kept on going around doing was talking, telling everybody how he punched Red Hulk once. That was his thing. He's like, did I tell you about the time I punched Red Hulk? And they're like, yes, we've heard it before. And then eventually during, I think it was during Infinity, he also went to go and fight. And in the one part's really funny. He's actually, you see Kid Gladiator, he's sitting there next to Hulk. And he's just staring at Hulk. And Hulk gets so like, he gets so like irritated with him that he actually gets up and like walks away. And he's like, I think in the one panel he even looks at Hulk and he says, I want to punch you. Because that's what he wants to do all the time.
Yeah.
it's such a great book, hey. I mean, like, also the thing is with like this X-Men Days of Future Past, like, they used Hugh Jackman, and that's fine. I think he's a great Wolverine, and I love watching him act. And in the Wolverine movie, he was awesome. But he did nothing special in this. Like, there was no reason it had to be him. Like, he could have just been... They could have sent Kitty Pryde back, and she could have gone to look for the younger Wolverine and convinced him to help her and have the two of them go through all this, which would have made for such, like, great character moments. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and you could have still had him as, like, a big thing. Instead, he goes back in time and doesn't do anything special.
Yeah, there's this really, for those of you that remember the film, that there's this really tense moment when they finally find Mystique and she's about ready to shoot Trask. And this is the moment that Wolverine actually came back in time specifically for.
Yes.
And spends the whole scene in a flashback, like parallel.
Yes.
And that was really awkward. I thought, as a person who liked the movie, that was the one part of the film I thought was badly written.
Well, yeah, kind of taken. I mean, he's been your point of view character until the very end, then all of a sudden you're like, oh, you're out of here.
Yeah.
And I'm glad they at least rescued him at the end from drowning in the Potomac. But
yeah, and from what I can tell from the end, because I was writing to some of my friends and they couldn't figure out, well, wait a minute, why is Mystique, like, kidnapping Wolverine?
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. You're
no,
saying,
that's not what's happening. That's not what's happening. What's happening is that she is pretending to be Stryker and rescuing him. She's taking him away so that Stryker can't get him.
Yeah, that was my take on that, too.
But then he basically wouldn't have adamantium claws then for
exactly.
the rest of everything.
Exactly. And so the next movie we're going to find out, I would bet money right now that not only will he not have his adamantium skeleton and claws, I would not be surprised if he wakes up to find out that he and Mystique have had a relationship for the last 40 years that he now does not remember.
We hate it when that happens.
Yeah,
that would also jive with the comics, with what happened with Battle of the Atom.
Battle of the Atom.
Yeah, it was pretty wild. I mean, but the
it was, yeah.
The cool thing about that was, and if you haven't read it, pause this recording for, you know, like three minutes or so. But with Battle of the Atom, I mean, you know, you have that one scene where he's sitting there and, you know, everything's going to hell, but he's got his friends to kind of help him, and then all of a sudden he realizes this person right next to him is not who he thinks it is, and all of a sudden there's a cross between Mystique and Wolverine. And, you know, this blue, shape-changing, claw-popping psychopath starts ripping into everybody. And they're like, you know, who is that? And, you know, somebody from the future looks at him and says, well, what do you mean, who is that? That's your son.
Yeah.
You and Raven, you remember this, right? You know,
yeah.
And that was, you know, that if that was a smart tie-in from the movie, then, you know, kudos. If it was an accident, kudos to the fans.
Well, Go ahead.
I know. I was going to say, I love that moment, because, like, directly after that, when he says, like, no, that's your son that you had with Mystique and stuff. Directly after that, Wolverine goes, like, I am never having sex again. Like, because she could be anyone. That was brilliant.
There was a brief interview with Jackman after this film came out, and a lot of people have been suggesting that he doesn't want to do Wolverine anymore. And he himself had said that he could see the end of the Wolverine road coming, because, you know, he's not getting any younger and the character requires a lot of physical action. But after this film came out, he said, you know, this film specifically kind of resets Wolverine's whole future, and he could go anywhere and do anything. And it was specifically that blank slate aspect of the character now that makes Jackman want to go back and do more Wolverine. And I think that that's exactly what he's talking about, is this fact that Wolverine doesn't have any of that tragedy. He hasn't been the victim anymore. Now, they might end up coming up with some bullshit reason why he got rescued by Mystique and still got kidnapped and still got adamantium.
Yeah.
But that would all have to happen.
Unless in the next movie he becomes a Horseman of Apocalypse and Apocalypse gives it to him. Maybe.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. If you can have Jackman do some more Wolverine movies, that's money in the bank. I mean,
But have you read that, like, and this is also a problem with Fox. They've got, like, now they're like, okay, no, you know, Wolverine's, like, only maybe got, like Jackman's got another maybe two movies in him. He's got, like, another X-Men movie and another Wolverine movie, and then afterwards that's kind of it. So they're going, okay, cool. So now we need a new focus character. And it's like, it's the fucking X-Men. It should be a focus team, not just a focus freaking character. Like, you have tons of people to freaking choose from. But no, that their next focus character is going to be Gambit, who's going to be, like, taking them through everything.
Oh, Channing Tatum. Yeah.
I think it'll be cool, but, like, why just focus on one character? Like, I want to see, who doesn't want to see Cable in a movie?
You know, to a certain extent, you could argue that The Avengers was sort of an Iron Man movie. And he, you know, he's kind of your point of view character for, you know, he's the gateway for people into the other, you know, if you didn't see Thor or Captain America, you know.
So much of these films are driven by the amount of money it takes to pay that actor.
Yeah.
No, that's true.
And whoever you pay the most money has to be the highlight character. And I don't like it. It's awful. It's dumb. It makes for worse movies. But it's a physical reality. You know? It takes a pretty gutsy director to break it.
I think your best superhero movies are the animated stuff that goes right to DVD for that reason. Or one of the
yeah.
reasons. Hey, I don't mean to cut anybody off.
I want to hear what Walt says.
I was going to say, well, Walt's been quietly in the background. So, Walt, what do you think?
He's always got some interesting introspective there, so I'm, like, dying to hear that.
Well, I'm actually gonna split the difference because you know, while we have Jason who really liked it and Sean who was, you know, lukewarm to cold on it, I was pretty much middle of the road, and I was that way for several reasons. Although I liked a lot of the film, one of the things I really feel that this film missed that the other one got right, and I know I'm going to take shit for this because
which other one do you mean?
First Class.
Okay.
Oh. And like I said, I'm going to take shit for this because a lot of people bust my chops because I like that movie. But one of the things I really loved about that movie were there were some really intense character moments in that. And like one of the ones that and I don't know if it just resonates with me because I was a really angry kid growing up, you know, very, you know, I always felt alone and always felt this or that. And I had that mentor figure that came into my life and said, no. You're doing this all wrong. You're trying to either focus this totally on rage or you're trying to focus this on this, and you have to split the difference. And I remember that scene where Magneto is aiming his hand at that big radar dish, and Charles Xavier is like, you know, that person who believes in him, despite all this, you know, negativity that the guy had, and despite all of this this baggage that and sorrow this man has been through, Charles said, you know, through his actions, I see that you're a good man, and let me help you see that. And when he says, you know, not only does he bring up that memory of Magneto's mother to see, you know, that birthday memory, yeah. But then he says, you know, there's, you know, true focus lies somewhere between rage and tranquility. And when the actor started like welling up in his eyes and stuff like that, and the friendship between them, that got, I was sitting in the theater with goosebumps, like, you know, sure. Almost harking back to my own childhood. Yeah. And I didn't really feel that there was a moment like that in this film. I mean, a little bit at the end between Raven and Charles, but you know, that moment, like those moments that really grabbed me, or that moment of like absolute despair at the end where Magneto's pushing that, pushing the quarter, the German coin, through Shaw's head, and Charles is like, you know, screaming in pain, not so much for the loss of this evil prick that he's killing, but more for the loss of his friend's humanity. I mean, those kind of moments in a film, you know, drop my jaw, give me goosebumps, and make me want to stand up in the middle of a movie theater so that I get popcorn thrown at me. But I mean, you know, for this film, I really didn't get that. But the thing that I did like was, and I'll go back to, you know, I love it when Aid Smith comes on and, he throws his, you know, he throws some angry British commentary at some of these movies. because, you know, one of the things he said was that, you know, everybody's going out in these comic book movies and they're aping the comics or trying to ape as close to the comics as possible. And they're bringing these stories that we all grew up with to life, but they're not really doing anything new, you know? But I think that this film did do a couple of things new, like the change of Kitty Pryde being the focus versus Wolverine. And I get why they did that because, you know, not only does it make sense, like you guys were saying, from a fiscal point of view, but also think about, you know, this takes place in the 70s, like the very early 70s. Now, I don't know how old Kitty Pryde is supposed to be in, and I can't remember, in the actual Days of Future Past storyline, but I know that in 1972, I just popped out, and yeah. I'm 41.
Yeah.
So to have Wolverine, who's been around for centuries, be the focal point, to me, that makes a little sense. You know, stuff like that, like those little changes that came into play, that I really enjoyed. But the thing that killed it for me, that kind of lost my enjoyment a little bit, are like, you know, they have those videos that people do, the 200 things that are wrong with this movie or that movie.
Yeah. I was
watching one of those, and then all of a sudden, I don't know what made me think of it. It just popped in my head. Quicksilver. I loved the Quicksilver scenes. I loved Quicksilver. I love the fact that he, you know, made references to, hey, my mom knows somebody who can control metal.
Yeah.
You know, like, hey, there's dad. You know, that kind of stuff. That was all fun. But the thing that killed it for the action scene that was just so wild and it took my breath away.
The music was
Yeah, the musical number.
Yeah.
Days later, I'm sitting there and I'm watching one of those stupid things and I put it on pause and I'm like, all right, so wait a minute. He's moving several feet in 1/100th of a second. He's probably got to be breaking the sound barrier, all that stuff. And that's not really what bothered me. What bothered me was...
The song was out of date.
The song was out of phase with how fast he was moving. If he was playing, if he was moving that fast, that song would have sounded like, you know, somebody had smoked a 20-foot bong and set up like a Harley Davidson.
Well, he somehow is able to slow the music as well as himself, in other words.
Yeah. Why? Yeah. how did that happen? So I don't know. Like I said, I was middle of the road for the film. I really enjoyed a lot of it, but there were just certain parts that didn't grab me. And like I said, that X-Men First Class, there were some emotional impact moments that made you feel like, yes, this is how someone becomes a hero, or this is what tragedy does to a person to make them a villain. So that's kind of where I was.
Yeah, the moments when they tried to go for that emotional depth in this film, and you can think of which ones there are. There's the moment.
The plane was one of the ones for me.
Which one?
One of those moments was the one on the plane where they start shouting at each other.
Yeah.
You know, and Wolverine is like, "Oh yeah, you're still a dick," kind of thing. that was cool. Like it was that felt quite like an emotional moment, but it was like for me, the rest of them were kind of few and far between. But in First Class, like you said, that whole exchange between Charles and Eric was like literally exactly how they are in the comics, and that's why it was so awesome and heartfelt, because you're like, that's how Xavier was. He's always felt that way about Eric and always thought that, listen, you're a good person, I can freaking change you, you know, you can come to our side. And Eric was just too stubborn to ever do that, you know. And that's why I think those moments are really great, because they basically just channel the comics, and the parts where they don't are kind of mediocre.
Who gives you shit about First Class? I love that movie.
I mean, I enjoyed it, but I mostly liked it because it was so 70, so 60s. Like when we saw like the lounge on the submarine, that was like
that was like a James Bond movie.
Yeah. But in this film, the emotional moments, like when Charles has to decide to go back in the chair, he has to choose between his powers or walking. And he gets sort of Wolverine kind of helps him. And then there's another one where we have another couple of moments like that, like between Charles and Magneto in the future, for example. I didn't think any of those were really very compelling. I thought a lot of them were kind of reaching and kind of ham-handed. And I don't know how I would fix them necessarily, but I agree with you that it didn't have that kind of grab you by the shirt power that you're describing, Walt.
That's one thing Marvel does pretty well, is make sure there's an emotional core to its movies.
Yeah, those guys, I love them. I get when Marvel Studios brings out a movie, I get super excited. Like I go and I'm like, I check every day as soon as the tickets are available, so I can be one of the first people to watch it, kind of thing. I get super excited. When it's Fox or Sony, I'm like, meh. I can wait a couple of weeks. It's fine. There's no rush. When it's Warner, I'm like, yeah, maybe next month. We'll see how it goes, kind of thing.
Even the Thor movies, which are not exactly high art, you know, let's be honest, they're not the greatest superhero movies in the world. But I remember the first Thor film, and they totally sold me on not only Thor's maturation as a person when he comes to understand and accept responsibility, but also they totally sold me on the brotherhood between he and Loki, which is what now has become the heart and soul of those movies, you know.
Totally
Yeah, they're just better written. They're well written, and they're the phenomenal talent and great directors that know how to get the most out of those actors.
But I think with X-Men stuff as well, the problem is they like write themselves into these corners.
Yeah.
And sitting there going like, why did you do that? I felt that the whole plot points with Xavier, like, walking and then having to choose, that whole thing could have been left out. Like, why didn't you just have him in the chair from the beginning and make space for, like, more other character moments, like, you know? And the whole, Quicksilver,
man, I wanted him to be like the normal Quicksilver, and I wanted to see him do more stuff.
Yeah.
It's like Singer was like, okay, I have this one cool visual idea, so we need to get like a character just to do that for the entire flick.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, one thing, Jason, I would argue with you that the Thor movies have been better Superman movies than the last couple Superman movies, but
and Captain America has been a better Superman movie. Come on.
I'm not going to disagree with you. I'm going to quote Chris Sims and say, there will never be a time when I won't be angry about Man of Steel.
Oh, dude, high five.
Yeah,
that pisses me off so much.
It's so. In fact, I'm actually thinking about writing a book on it. I talked to some guys in academia, and a friend of mine who's an editor for a line wrote to me and said, you know, do you have anything you'd like to write about superheroes? And I said, yes, I want to write like the definitive book about Superman as the Christ figure and why this is awful. And I'm going to have a whole chapter just on Man of Steel. Because I'm pretty sure I know the Christ story, and it doesn't end with burning a guy's face off using heat vision.
It doesn't?
That's in some of the apocryphal gospels, if you dig it.
Yeah, it's gospel according to Zod.
If that happened, I would have paid more attention in church.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm sure you would have. That's just a terrible film.
I was so disappointed. Like for me, the only real Superman moment in that entire movie was when he saves those guys on the tanker in the ocean. I sat there and I was going, wow, this is fucking Superman. And then that's where the Superman movie ended and some other fucking shit started. And I was going,
what
the fuck is... Where did we lose the plot here, guys?
If they had just maybe called it Ultraman and changed his costume a little bit, that would have been fine.
Was Dragon Ball Z2?
Something, yeah. It didn't feel like the character, especially when you have a character with this much comic book and cinematic history.
And the real tragic part of this is that a whole generation of young people now think that's Superman.
I know. How sad is that?
They don't get a Superman that saves people and that doesn't burn the guy to death with heat vision. They do.
They totally do. He's called Thor.
You're not wrong. Yeah.
I refer my panel to my previous comments on that subject. So I agree with you guys on that. Have you heard this crazy rumor that, like, if you look at the poster Marvel had for their 75th anniversary,
yes.
Guardians of the Galaxy, Avengers, no X-Men, no Fantastic Four, and the rumor was that because Fox, whoever bought the rights to those characters when Marvel's going through bankruptcy and got a really good deal on them, like kind of bit Marvel over the barrel. And so Marvel doesn't, you know, is a little pissed about that. Like Ike Perlmutter, who's the CEO of Marvel and one of the biggest stockholders of Disney. The rumor is they actually have to pay Fox and or Sony some rights. I mean, even for like merchandise, like if they were to put out X-Men toys, they have to give them some. It's just a rumor. I mean, no.
The rumor is that they're going to cancel Fantastic Four and not publish it.
As a way to spite Fox while they're doing promotion for Fantastic Four movie.
Yeah, just,
for the Fantastic Four movie that I'm also not really excited about.
Oh, I don't think anyone really is. Before I say that, is anyone on this call excited about the Fantastic Four movie?
I am. I really am. I really want to look forward to seeing it, and that's partly because I've been a Doctor Doom fanboy since I was a kid, and I really want to see what they do with him.
I'm really glad to see that someone's hopeful for it. Like, I hope they give you a good Doctor Doom, honestly.
Yeah,
you know.
The last one was awful. Yeah.
Last one was, I was surprised I got a sequel, but I mean, it's,
Oh, you know what the problem is? As soon as, you know, when I started doubting it, was when I started seeing, every time they had, like, info on the new Fantastic Four movie, they were like, no, we're going to focus on it. It's going to be, like, very real, like a lot of realism. And I'm like, it's the fucking Fantastic Four. Realism should be your least important fucking concern on that movie. The Fantastic Four, not the reality Four, like the realism Four. No, like guys.
Yeah, you're totally right. Yeah, I don't know what it's going to look like, but I like to give, you know, the director a shot. It's not written by David Goyer, so it's got a chance.
Thanks.
why that guy writes superhero movies, I have no idea. He clearly doesn't like superheroes, guys.
He does not like superheroes. He doesn't, I mean, everyone here has heard his comments about She-Hulk, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
I'm sure we have a listener somewhere who hasn't, so maybe you want to refresh for our listeners, Jason.
Goyer was at a con, and you know, let's be fair, let's put this in the right context. It was a casual audience. He's with a bunch of other people up on the table, and he wanted to make funny comments. He wanted to say things that were going to get a laugh. But what happened is people asked him, well, okay, so you have been given the She-Hulk movie or the Martian Manhunter movie. What do you do? And he proceeds to go on, he sort of starts talking off the top of his head about how, well, clearly She-Hulk is just like this male porn fantasy. She's like, I'm going to use harsh language here, but this is what he used. He said, you know, she's just the woman the Hulk can fuck. Like, she's the woman who's so big and powerful and strong that the Hulk can fuck her. And then he actually, and you can tell where he gets his idea from, because then he name drops China. Now, for those of you that know who she is, she's a wrestler, and she stars in the Avengers porn movie as She-Hulk. So this is where Dan Goyer gets his knowledge about She-Hulk, is from porn movies.
Not that I'm remembering anything Goyer said, but John Byrne kind of had a creepy run on that book.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, he kind of did.
Byrne's She-Hulk was very meta. Like, she knew that she was in a comic book, and she made fun of the comic book all the time, and she would, like, walk in between the panels and go into the gutters. I remember one very funny sequence where she ran through the advertising pages. She consistently fought like the most lame villains in the entire Marvel universe. She met US-1. She fought Stilt Man. You know, I mean, it was for comedy. And then Byrne would do creepy shit. But yeah, he certainly did. He certainly did.
So anyway, just saying. But I'm not really looking forward to the Fantastic Four movie. But you know, who knows? Maybe they'll surprise us.
Maybe, but like I don't have like a lot of odds on that. But, I mean, hey, Guardians of the Galaxy coming up soon. Super stoked about that. stoked about it.
You want to talk about characters?
Song stuck in my head.
The funny thing is that you should like them because when I think of Guardians of the Galaxy, I think of the original Guardians of the Galaxy.
The classic with the freaking Starhawk and all those
exactly.
guys.
Exactly. And these guys are nothing like that. And I thought you would like, well, but they're not doing the comics, so the movie therefore sucks.
No, but you see, the thing is, I didn't read a lot of those Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
I read the Annihilation Conquest Guardians of the Galaxy stuff. And I loved it.
Right?
I loved that. Yeah, exactly. And that was like Lord of the Rings in space. So I'm hoping that if Guardians of the Galaxy is a hit, we'll actually get the Annihilation storyline in a movie at some point, because that'd be freaking amazing.
Right.
And that could also hopefully lead into a Nova movie, which Nova is really awesome.
Now,
doesn't Annihilation use the villain Annihilus?
Yeah.
Yes.
They can't do that then, because he's part of the Fantastic Four license. They could do the plot, but they'd have to be a different villain.
Oh, yeah, it changes.
Yeah, but they could also do. I think who is the villain in Conquest? Oh, Ultron. Ultron was the villain in Conquest, though.
Yeah, Annihilation Conquest was Ultron.
Yeah.
You get the whole Empire involved there. But yeah, it could definitely happen. I've been amazed at their marketing for this, because this time a year ago, I mean, outside of people like us, no one knew or gave a fuck who the Guardians of the Galaxy were.
That's right.
The funny thing about that is, and this I actually saw this, I think I saw it on Twitter or like in an article somewhere, was how Warner and DC are like, no, we can't do a Wonder Woman movie because, you know, female-led movies don't make enough money, and she's a very complicated character. And Marvel Studios are like, here's a space raccoon with a gun, go.
Yeah, they're I've seen that meme around too, and yeah, they have a point. I mean, hell, after Thor, I would think you could make a Wonder Woman movie. You know, just using that as a template. I mean, they kind of take the whole, you know, God among mundane people and do it pretty well. But,
They can't do it because Goyer can't write that.
No,
Goyer has to write dark and gritty, and the fact that Marvel is making a fortune off of movies about a guy who wears a red, white, and blue uniform and another guy who lives in a magic city with a rainbow bridge.
No. You sit there, you're like, that's ridiculous, but it's so amazing.
But it is. It's amazing. It's so amazing. And Marvel is not afraid to do that, but DC can't. Warner Brothers can't, because Goyer's their man, and and he can't write that shit. He has to only write dark and gritty.
No,
I usually say that if people go like, oh, like what would you do if you could do a Wonder Woman movie? Yeah. I'd be like, well, just give the Wonder Woman movie to Marvel Studios and they'll make it and it'll be awesome.
Yeah. You know, for people who say they don't like the movies aren't like comic books, I've got to point out Thor isn't anything like any of the Thor comics except for Thor the Ultimates.
Yeah, he looks like the Ultimates, but he doesn't feel like the Ultimates Thor at all.
I don't know. He kind of reminds me of the like when Straczynski and Coypel brought Thor back.
Yes.
He reminds me like that. That's the Thor that the movie Thor reminds me of.
Yes. I was on a panel at San Diego Comic Con 2 years ago, and Phil Jimenez was there, and he made a pitch for the Wonder Woman movie that they will never let him make, and it was so good because
if anybody could like I trust with Wonder Woman, it's Phil Jimenez.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
He gets her like really well.
And what he proposed was that it's a mother daughter movie. That it's all the heart, the relationship at the heart of that movie is Hippolyta and her daughter. And you make it about that rather than Steve Trevor or any of that other stuff. And you make it a movie about mothers and daughters that's a superhero movie.
That would be amazing.
It would be amazing. But Warner Brothers, they don't have the guts to do it.
No, and the thing is, like, not only, I mean, we kind of compare it to Thor, but it's basically, if DC had to do that, or rather Warner, like, I don't necessarily blame DC as much, but I think Warner calls the shots on this stuff.
Yeah.
But it's basically they would have Captain America and Thor in, like, one movie, because you could have her mother in World War II beating the crap out of Nazis, throwing tanks at people, and then you could even speed it up, like, to modern day where, like, the young Diana comes here and she starts, like, kind of exploring stuff and the comparison between the two and, you know, instead of having her as a, you know, like a, you're, like, that whole typical, oh, no, we've got a female in the what's-her-name, she has to have a love interest, you have the mother-daughter thing. Like, screw the love interest, you can do that later on in a natural progression, but it doesn't have to be, like, the main driving force of the freaking movie.
There's so much to be had there in the whole contest plotline where Hippolyta is like, okay, we have to send somebody to Man's World because there's this bad guy out there and we have to go stop him. So we'll have a contest and the most powerful of the Amazons will go. Except Diana, you can't enter, right?
Because that is a cool opening.
She's so protective, like, no, you're my daughter. It's going to be too dangerous. I can't let you go. It's kind of like the Little Mermaid, you know? Like, you remember the beginning of the Little Mermaid?
Yeah.
And Diana would be like, well, but I want to go, and I can do it, and no, I don't care. Go back to your room, you know? And then she sneaks out, and she puts on the helmet, and she competes. And then there's that moment where she pulls the helmet off. Mom has to acknowledge, oh, my God, now I have to send my daughter into harm's way. And at the same time, she also has to understand, but my daughter is taking charge of her own life. And it's that daughter leaves home moment. Aha! It'd be so good!
We'll never see that movie.
We will never see that
movie. No, you won't. You'll see some dark version of her in Batman Superman.
Yeah.
When's that coming out? Is that next year or the year after?
I think it's the year after, actually.
Well, they're already filming, so it's 2015.
Yeah, they also said that they're... I guess Marvel is being kind of a dick because they're like, yeah, the weekend you launch Superman Batman, we're going to launch the next Captain America film.
Right.
You're welcome.
Yeah, they're.
I know. I was so stoked there.
Hey, you know, that reminds me of something we should probably bring up that maybe the fact that I didn't even think of it says something. Anybody give a shit about Ant-Man?
In what sense do we give a shit about Ant-Man? Like, it's a Marvel Studios movie, so I'm pretty stoked about it.
Yeah, but they're having tons of trouble with trying to keep a director. So
yeah, the director left, and it was his project. He's the one that pitched it to Marvel. What was his name? Paul Rudd?
No, Paul Rudd is the star. He was the guy who directed Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead and a few others like that.
Well, it was his project, and he's the one that convinced Marvel to do it, and he showed the test footage at Comic-Con and everything, and he built a whole phenomenon. About 8 years he's been pushing this movie. And from what I can understand, and some folks, I think Heidi McDonald at The Beat or something did a little bit of investigation, and she found out that basically Marvel wanted to bring in like more outside characters. Like they wanted to knit it more into the Marvel continuity so that maybe other characters in the movies would show up, or there would be ties into, you know, S.H.I.E.L.D. or other villains or whatever. They wanted to link it in more. And he didn't want to do that. That wasn't his picture.
You see, the thing is, like, Edgar Wright, like, I love his movies. I freaking absolutely love all
of his
movies.
Was, yeah.
So, like, I'm a big fan of his.
Yeah.
But I think that even though he would have made a great Ant-Man movie, I have no doubt he would have. I think he would have made it very much like his thing. Like, he's like indie stamp.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think actually Marvel probably would have made the right call here. I mean, like, I was a bit kind of taken aback by Michael Douglas as Hank Pym. And I was like, why do you want to do that? Because he hasn't got a lot of movies in, and that's kind of, like, weird. Like, why not kind of – I'm hoping that they'll be like, okay, well, let's bring someone younger in. I mean, they've got that guy from Watchmen. What the hell is his name? Patrick something? They were announced this other guy that was in it, something Patrick or whatever.
Who did he play in Watchmen?
Night Owl.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And they brought him in, and I'm like, he would make a great Hank Pym. And so, you know.
Well, you know, you realize what they could do if what I would do if I was Marvel, I would use the old Hank Pym. I would use Michael Douglas' Hank Pym, and then I would put a young Hank Pym in the Agent Carter series.
Oh, that could be cool.
Oh, okay. No, well, the thing is, what I would do is, I would have. There we go, Patrick Wilson. And, you know, you have, like, that way you can have Hank Pym and Scott Lang, and you can still have an Ant-Man and a Giant Man going forward into Marvel movies.
Yeah.
You know, which would also be kind of cool, and also it would be nice to see Wasp in there. And so I think Marvel probably made the right call in wanting to tie it into their stuff a bit more for, like, the future movies that they might have planned.
You know,
so I don't think it's going to lose much as a movie. It's just going to be, like, more mainstream as in, and less indie, I suppose.
You know, it reminds me, when you were describing it like that, it reminds me of Tim Burton's Batman. You know, that was a very interesting Batman, but it was totally Tim Burton's Batman. You know?
Yeah, I definitely can see your point on that. I love the movie when it came out. I don't know if it's aged that well, though.
Batman?
Yeah, Tim Burton's Batman.
Yeah,
I watch it every couple of years. I still love it. As terrible and, like, the plot doesn't make any sense most of the time, I still love it.
I cringe when he kills so many people. Like when the Batmobile drops the bomb and explodes the chemical factory and stuff. And that's not Batman to me. But
that was one thing they got right in the latest trilogy of movies, and that was a lot darker and grittier. Was that Batman didn't like to kill?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
No, well, it's like Nolan's movies. Yeah. Like, Batman's like, I don't have to kill you, but I don't have to save you either. And I'm like, that means you're killing him, dumbass. Like,
yes.
Come on.
Yeah, yeah. But the fans love it. I mean, not you and me, not the comics readers, but the 9 out of 10 people that have never read a Batman comic in their life, they love that.
Can I say,
to be honest.
As much as I hate, like, Man of Steel and the Batman...
Yeah.
Like that whole thing, I think that the best thing. Okay, I like Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman. Like, I think she's pretty hot, but yeah. Like whether she can, like, pull off the acting, I still have to see, because she's only been in, like, Fast and Furious, and that doesn't require much acting. Let's face it. So if she's got the acting chops for it, I'm super keen to see what she can bring to the role. But I'm actually pretty amped about Ben Affleck's Batman.
Ah, really?
I'm like, I really dig the costume and the new Batmobile. Like, it looks literally like it's come out of the comics. So I'm like, okay, there's one tick you guys get from me for that movie. Let's see what else you got. And also, I think because Ben Affleck knew that he's, like, got an uphill battle, I think he's going to try really, really hard to pull out all the stops on this. And I think he's going to surprise a lot of people. So, like, Superman might completely suck and everything else, but I think he might actually be very, very surprising. And hopefully give me the Batman movies that I want to see. The ones where he's fighting not any of the villains that we've seen before. Like, I want to see him fighting freaking Clayface, shape-changing freaking guys, and like Killer Croc, and like those type of villains, and showing like why he doesn't need powers, but he can still beat guys that have these abilities.
And Matt Damon is Robin. Nobody.
No. That's just me. No.
I mean, that's just you. You know, I gotta say, as far as the Batman goes, I mean, there is now, you know, with the advent of the technology that we have, I gotta tell you, my favorite Batman movies, and I don't really read DC. My partner Andrew, he's a big DC fan, and you know, from the top of the Great White North up in Canada, he's constantly berating me to get into DC, and I just can't do it. There's just something about the characters that don't ring true. But recently I've been getting into Batman, and it's because my favorite portrayal of Batman that I've seen since, you know, dating back all the way to, like, we were just talking about Keaton to now, is the Arkham Asylum video games from Warner Bros.
Dude.
They're amazing.
Dude.
As soon as you started to talk, I knew you were going to say that. I've had students that are the same way, that's like their Batman. And when I was younger, my favorite version of Batman was the animated series Batman.
Oh, yeah, of course. That was also great.
Absolutely.
Like, that's classic Batman. Every time you imagine Batman's voice, you hear Kevin Conroy.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
It's kind of hard to admit that that's 20 years ago now for that show.
Oh, don't even go there.
God.
We are old men.
Wow, now we're all feeling our age, right?
Yeah.
it's not just me.
I just turned 42 3 days ago, so yeah, I'm fully feeling my age.
Congratulations. Happy birthday.
Oh, well, thank you.
Happy belated birthday.
Oh,
yeah. Am I the youngest one here, then? I'm like 36, so it's not too bad.
Yeah, you're the youngest one here.
Yeah. Woohoo!
We're gonna call you
a few good years.
A few good years. Shut up.
Enjoy them while you can.
I try.
I got a lot of good years ahead of me, Mister.
No, I mean those Arkham games. How could, like, you sit there and you just play them and you think, like, why is this not a Batman movie? Why is it not like this extreme? Why doesn't it have this tone? You know, and he do all these crazy freaking fighting moves and have these gadgets, and why doesn't the city look this way, and why don't the villains, like, I mean, have a whole movie that's way stuck in Arkham Asylum. I think everybody would freaking love it. We'd be like, hey, you know. And Warner's like, no, we don't want to do that kind of stuff.
And now they're even introducing that new villain, the Arkham Knight. I mean, that's huge for a video game, you know, for media to introduce those new characters to the comics, you know, like they did with Harley Quinn and so forth and so on. That's huge.
I've got a theory that, like, video games and animation has maybe a less arduous development process than movies. There's less people their fingers in the pie, and so you can get more of a singular vision.
Definitely.
So, anyway, you were saying?
I was going to say, I still think they should just get Paul Dini to freaking write a Batman movie. Like, just make it happen, and it'll be amazing.
They don't trust him. He's not dark and gritty enough. Warner Brothers, and honestly, this is actually part of DC's problem too. DC, ever since basically Crisis, has been kind of obsessed with out-marveling Marvel, you know, with like trying to make their characters more dark and gritty and realistic. And they really, in my opinion, and I'm certain many people will disagree with me because they love those comics, but in my opinion, they have lost their way. They have lost what made their characters unique and special, which was that they weren't dark and gritty and realistic. They were
they were real heroes, you know. They like were bright and like
that's right.
You know,
that's
these,
right.
And these they symbols were, of humanity and the best that people
you know,
can do for each other. And
all you got to do is read All Star Superman again. And if anybody listening to this has not read All Star Superman, you have no business reading comics. But that book establishes, like, you know, when DC is right, when DC is doing itself right, that's what it's doing.
No, totally. When they let people that are creative be creative. You know what I'm afraid of? I'm afraid I'm never ever gonna get a job at DC because I complain about them so much. but you've got to understand that it comes from the fact that, like, I grew up with these characters and I really love them. And when they turn every single character into this dark and gritty, freaking parallel universe version of the characters that they have always been and what they mean to people, it gets upsetting. And it comes from a place of love that I sit and bitch about them all the time.
I mean, you're an artist, right? You're an artist.
Can I tell you a funny story?
Tell me.
Two or three years ago, every once in a while I get a comic book to come on the podcast, and it's usually if they aren't thinking too long and they haven't realized how small my audience is. I had Scott Lobdell come on right after the New 52 launch.
That's right, I remember.
It was a huge get, and we talked for a while. I guess I still got his phone on my cell phone. And the very next podcast we had was Chris McLaughlin from Green Ronin, and he spent a good quarter of his time talking about what a jackhole he thought Scott Lobdell was and how he was on his hat. That son of a bitch shouldn't be writing comics anywhere. He should be working at a Walmart. And Scott Lobdell quit turning my calls after that podcast.
He quit taking your calls?
Yeah. I love having Chris McLaughlin as a guest. I'd just love to have him and Scott on the same podcast if possible. But
yeah. Well, you can't get hired by DC right now unless you draw like Jim Lee.
No, that's true. But that's the one thing I'm loving so much about Marvel now. Now I grew up reading Marvel and DC, but I was a DC guy. All my favorite characters were in DC. Like my favorite characters specifically were Dick Grayson and Roy Harper. So I grew up reading them as like Robin and Speedy, and then, you know, like Arsenal and Nightwing and so on and whatever. So, but then lately it was just kind of like when DC lost their way, and now I'm a full on like Marvel person. Like I have a crap load of Marvel titles because not every book looks exactly the same.
That's right.
And if I want to read a dark and gritty book, I will pick up maybe Moon Knight, for example, or something like that. Yeah. Or if you want some, but there's also the variety. I'll be like, hey, I want something fun, so I'll pick up Wolverine and the X-Men because it'll give me a good couple of laughs and stuff. But every DC book right now is just so dark and so kind of tiring. And there's some obviously that stand out because I just kind of stopped reading them. I'm narrowed it down to like maybe two or three titles. Like I read Batman.
Yeah,
Greg Paul and Scott Snyder. I'm loving that. That book is amazing, obviously. And things like Swamp Thing's great. But otherwise, not much really. Like, I'll give Grayson a try.
Warren Ellis's recent mentioned Moon Knight. Warren Ellis's recent turn on Moon Knight has been really fun. I mean, it's a real flavor for the character. Have you been reading it?
I picked up issue one, and then I'm going to get the rest in trade, actually, because I like reading big, because I tend to forget unless it's like specific titles, I tend to forget what happened the month before, because I'm always so busy, and the days become a blur I've kind of realized that when you're making comics, you have a lot less time to actually read comics.
This is why you fall asleep in movies, man.
Well, I'm going to just not comment on that, and so I end up getting trades so that I can read the whole story and I keep track of everything. The things that are like, so I read the first one and I just the premise of it was like, wow, this is really cool, and I'm liking that there's like these different Moon Knights and they all look so vastly different, and I'm strange, and I'm like, wow, that is cool.
Yeah, it's the same guy, but yeah, you got different. He rides around in that car, kind of wearing his suit and tie and face mask, and then he changes out for different missions.
There's a superhero version, and then there's the one that has that weird kind of beak and all that stuff.
That was one where he got his ass kicked by some ghosts, and he goes back to his empty mansion, and he's talking to the voices in his head, one of which is Khonshu. And Khonshu was like, you know, you've been collecting Egyptian artifacts for years and years. I'm sure something in your basement you've forgotten about that will help you, you know, help deal with creatures of the, you know, dead creatures, because the Egyptian culture was blah, 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 blah. And he goes down there, and he's got a suit of armor for fighting ghosts.
That is awesome.
Yeah, that's what I love about Warren Ellis is it's almost, I remember a column where he described comics as like singles, like music, like a hit single. Mm-hmm. He just gets one single idea as kind of a meditation on it. And that issue is pretty much as simple as Moon Knight has creepy ancient Egyptian bone armor in his in his basement he uses for fighting ghosts. And it sounds simple, and it is, but it's kind of like a cool little action movie sequence. And he goes
that's
and
beats, very
up,
cool.
beats up the ghosts, and you know that's the end of it. And Each little issue has been kind of, you know, a different facet of the character, a different take on the character. The one that just came out, issue four, he had to go. There was a sleep study center that was everyone was having terrible dreams and going crazy, and he had to go there, and he had Khonshu put him into the dream space so he could investigate what was going on. And the art was just incredible as he's running through a dreamscape trying to figure out what's haunting this place.
So that is awesome.
It's a really cool take on the character, and it's not. I mean, I was. Your fear with Moon Knight is always they're going to either go heavy on the crazy or heavy on the, hey, I'm Batman. But
no, exactly.
Ellis is really doing something interesting with him and different. And I wish he was writing that book for years, but apparently he's only doing like a limited run. So
yeah, he's only going up to issue 7, I believe. It's really tragic because the book is good.
Yeah, it really.
Another one also, just to show you how vastly different that I'm glad like Marvel lets these people be, is the new the all new Ghost Rider. Has anybody looked at that?
I haven't. No.
Oh yeah, with the car.
Yeah, have you checked out like the art and all that stuff in it? Flip it,
yeah,
dude.
It's really, it reminds me a lot of the way the direction they went with Hawkeye.
Yeah, it's very like, but it's in your face. It's very extreme and like kind of elastic almost. But there's, I mean, I've also picked up like issue 1, and I'm gonna get the rest in trade. But I've been keeping a close eye on it and stuff. And there's just some scenes that these guys put together, where you see like this car, the car like riding, like motoring up behind Ghost Rider after he just beat the crap out of some guys on the highway, and these guys are like driving away from him, right? And you see there's this scene where you see his car comes up behind him, and he like almost phases through the whole car until he hits the like driver's seat and grabs the steering wheel, and then all of a sudden he's in the seat and he's in the car and he's driving with it,
right.
And it's just illustrated so well, like it blows your mind that he can like phase through cars. He like his car changes mid direction when it drives off a bridge, so that it goes back on the bridge. And the characters are just, because the cool thing about it is the main character, he's got like a little brother that he takes care of, and so he's got like this responsibility to be a big brother and protect him from all the crime outside his neighborhood and his streets, because there's like drug dealers and, you know, like flipping chop shops and all that shit around, and these gangs that want him to join, and every time he doesn't want to, the guys end up beating him up and threatening him and all that stuff. And eventually this other spirit of vengeance, not the one from Danny Ketch or Johnny Blaze, this other one shows up and makes a deal with him. And it's such a great book. Like, I love that they trying these things with these characters. Marvel's introducing such fun new characters, basically, you know.
Yeah, pretty much Batman 66 is all I'm reading from DC these days, unfortunately.
How is that? Like, I'm hearing lots of good reviews on it.
If you like the TV show, you'll like the book, because it feels just, to me, like the TV show.
Oh, man, I haven't seen the TV show in ages. The only thing I ever remember from the TV show is the Bat Shark Repellent. That's the only thing that stuck with me.
That is not
good. You just can't get rid of a bomb.
Oh, man.
Yeah, no, it's a lot of fun. And Kevin Smith's writing the Green Hornet Batman 66 team up, and that's been fun so far, which I think I said last time, that's kind of amazing because it's a Kevin Smith comic that I like. But, yeah.
Well, I'm a huge Smith fan. Like, I love his podcasts. Yeah. Do you guys listen to his Batman?
I hear the Smodcast is freaking hilarious. And I know Dan Houser, who used to be in this podcast a lot, is a big Kevin Smith fan. I think he might have even. I think he's like super active on their forums and shit. But no, I hear great things. I just haven't had a chance to listen to it.
And he's got a lot of guests on his Fatman on Batman stuff. So I often listen to that. I mean, he's got and you hear like their stories about how Batman influenced their lives, or how they you know, they kind of got to the like their career and how they got to draw or work or write on Batman and stuff like that. And it's very cool when you see like how these people came from nothing, or they had like really, really hard times to this point in their lives. It's very inspiring stuff.
You couldn't do that show about Moon Knight, could you?
Hey?
You couldn't do a show like that about Moon Knight. People talking about how their lives are influenced by Moon Knight. And, you know.
No. Oh, no. You could do the Spider-Man.
Well, Spider-Man or, you know, Squirrel Girl.
Superman.
Nova, you know.
Actually, I think it was, I want to say Bendis. Who said if he could? No, it was Dan Slott, I think, in an interview said that if he was at a round table, Marvel round table, and they asked if you could write any character, what would it be? And they went around the table, and everybody was like, Spider-Man, Captain America, blah, 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 Iron Man. And they got to him, and he yelled out Moon Knight.
Yeah.
Well, Bendis was right really? For a while. Yeah.
Every Moon Knight comic when I was a kid. I have, like, every reboot, every bad Moon Knight comic, every good one. I'm a huge Moon Knight fan.
You know, why haven't they ever done like a world's finest variation and have Sentinel and Moon Knight take team up together?
You're not the first person I've heard say that, actually.
Because it's the two
nut jobs.
Yeah. I think that'd be fun, but it would probably never happen. But
No, I've always been partial to if I had to work on comics, like I've always been partial to like rather working on the B-grade guys, Yeah. The top dude's always the more intimidating one. Like, put me on a Superman book and I would start, like, crapping myself a little bit. You know, but then put me on friggin', I don't know.
Daredevil?
Daredevil. Oh, I love Daredevil, dude. I would freaking, like, lose my shit if I had to draw Daredevil. No, but... But, I mean, they can put me on freaking, what, Stingray, the guy that was in Avengers for, like, 3 issues.
Great choice, yes, Stingray.
Stingray, or, like, Nighthawk, the one guy that everybody only knows because of the Defenders, you know, like, I would draw those books. I'd be like, yeah, okay, no pressure, that's fine.
You know, I was reading Midnight Tiger Zero, just came out on Comixology recently. And I read issue one a while back, and I was reading issue zero, and it struck me that this really feels like a Marvel comic.
I haven't read it.
Yeah, it's so a lot good. I'd highly recommend it. It's, I think issue zero you can get for like a buck right now on Comixology.
I think that's the thing between from previous podcasts and we've all talked about this before. I love the independent stuff, love it, and I think that one of the things that stands out to me a lot is you're going to weed through the sea of crap that you're going to get from guys just wanting to say that they wrote a comic, but then every once in a while you're going to get that hungry, that person who has that drive to really make something like Vito is doing with Stray, or like Ray is doing with Midnight Tiger. And I mean, not only do they build the book and build the characters that you start loving, but like Vito and Ray are doing, the building communities around them, so that you've got this like, not really a fan base, but somebody who's as passionate as you are that are now interacting directly with the writer. And, the story changes and adapts based on how they interact with their fans. That's wild to me. That's awesome.
Yeah, I know. Like, it's indie stuff is so great. I like it because you've got these new takes on characters. You just want to, and you sit there going, like, who's this guy? Like, how is he going to deal with these? What are his problems, And I've always got this thought that like every character in comics is someone's new character or someone's favorite character. So never like I hate dissing characters. So I try never to do that because somewhere it's someone's favorite.
Yeah, you can put me down for Squirrel Girl.
Squirrel Girl is awesome. I haven't read anything about her much except for those New Avengers issues.
Where she's
the
nanny.
Yes. Well, that was awesome.
She beat up Dr. Doom in canon of the 616. So, I mean, she's...
She did?
Yeah, back in the 70s.
She's a gag hero. She's only really got... There's only so many scenes that you can write with Squirrel Girl before you're just doing the same joke over and over again. I'm not surprised she hasn't been seen lately.
I think she could be great in, like, a Teen Titans Go kind of tone show.
Sure.
She'd be awesome. Like, and I love Teen Titans Go. Like, I don't know how many people hate it or love it, but
I know watchers who really
watch that, and I loved it so hard.
They blame it for the cancellation of the Young Justice cartoon, but I think it's hilarious. But I like my superheroes. I don't mind if they're lighthearted. I really don't. I appreciate the more serious stuff, but I don't mind if they're
if there's fun to be had. Like,
that's
cool. Well, but it actually did get quite dark for a while. At some point, it was like. Like towards season 3 or 4, whatever, it got pretty dark. Even it still had fun stuff, but the themes were pretty dark.
Are you talking about the New Teen Titans Go or the old one?
Because the original ones, not the current ones.
The current one's pretty explicitly just this comedy. But yeah, the old one got a little dark with the Slade plot lines. So guys, we've been talking for an hour and a half now. That hardly ever happens in this podcast.
Oh, it didn't feel like it, actually. So that's quite cool. and Walt doesn't say enough.
No, he doesn't.
I talk too much.
we like listening to you talk, Sean, because you have that accent.
Yeah.
No, I just say like a lot. That's not an accent. It's just
what accent?
That's just a speech impediment. Oh no.
Well, hey, we should probably mention, Walt has recently released, his company recently released Supers, which is number 3 or 4 on RPG Now. It's a great fun-playing Supers game. You should check it out because it's a shitload of fun. I don't have a good metaphor right now, but it's a lot of fun. Go check it out. It's $10. You should play
it. Thank you.
And Mr. Jason Tondreau, drcomics.blogspot.com. You can read his latest post was Interesting Rumination on the Nature of Owlbears.
Oh, yes. Wherefore art thou, Albert?
Well,
what? I love Albert.
Well, why don't you give us a little...
They're awesome.
I know, right? I want an Albert Pippin Familiar, but my DM will never give me one.
I had to come to the defense of the owlbear because people say there's no reason that an owlbear should exist. Why would you take a perfectly good bear and breed it with something small and puny? And I came up with three reasons why you would do that.
Can you send me a link? I want to see this.
Yes, I can.
Please, I really do.
Can you summarize for me what these three reasons are, Jason?
Sure. Number one, you want a nocturnal predator. Look, bears hibernate, man. And not only that, they don't hunt. Like, yeah, they could kill a dude, but they're actually perfectly happy to stick into his tent and eat his garbage. I mean, but an owl is a master of ambush, hit and run, night tactics. And that, okay, so let's.
And they can see perfectly in the dark.
Yeah, imagine a bear for a minute. Okay, imagine a bear. Now, imagine a bear that can see you in the middle of the night from miles away, runs up and grabs you so fast it breaks your neck, runs away from all of your friends, climbs up a tree and eats you. Okay, owlbear. Number two.
There you go.
Number two. Because the magical or mystical associations with owls, it may not make much sense in modern day biology, but in history, owls have all kinds of magical associations. They are associated with death and the underworld and with darkness. Ever since Gronk the caveman looked up into a tree and saw big eyes staring down at him, we have associated owls with death and the underworld. And they have a reputation as sort of banshee characters, where if you hear the sound of an owl, it means you're going to die soon. In Virgil's the Aeneid, Dido, Queen of Carthage, hears the owls, and that's how she knows that she's going to die. So, and not only that, also owls are associated with Athena, you know, the goddess of wisdom. So if you breed a bear with an owl, what that means is your owlbear is going to be smart. It's going to have the intelligence that we associate with owls. And if you're lucky, it might even have a death hoot.
That's the name of a character right there. Death.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Number three, you need it to be an owl. Look, there's all kinds of gods and goddesses who like are associated with owls. Like, okay, so you're the chief high priest of the temple of Athena, and you've got a dungeon, and thieves keep breaking in and stealing all your treasure. And what are you going to guard it with? I mean, you can't put a giant owl down in there. You got a 20-by-20-foot room. So you breed owl bears, and now the goddess of owls is pleased with you, and she doesn't mind that you're a giant bear who's as strong as an owl and has great big owl eyes and owl feathers all over its body. You're good. Three reasons why owl bears exist.
Oh, that's so awesome.
Do owl bears leave pellets the same way that owls do?
Don't go there.
Well, no, because the way owls, they'll like...
They leave pellets, but they're the size of your fist.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know if you guys have ever seen it, but and I'll eat a mouse whole and then later regurgitate the skeleton.
Oh, yeah, that I've seen, yeah.
That's an owl pellet. Weren't you guys in Scouts? Goddamn. Yeah, that's an owl pellet.
No, I
was in the Scouts, but we had artillery. It was a whole different thing.
different Scouts.
Yeah, we weren't firing live rounds except out of 22s at paper targets in the Scouts I was in.
All right, guys, I have to go.
All right, cool. Hey, everybody, thanks for joining us. And I was giving everybody a quick pimp. Sean, as we mentioned at the top of the podcast, is working on Stray and Pathfinder Goblins, so check them out. And everyone, thanks for tuning in. We will catch you next time on the Banff Podcast. And